The solid rock overhead formed a shield against the elements, not that it had rained or snowed on Mars for eons. There was frost from time to time, Jamie knew. Pitifully thin coatings of rime that condensed on the rocks overnight and evaporated with the morning sun. The endolithic lichen, living inside the rocks on the valley floor, depended on that meager source of moisture. Stepping to the face of the nearest building, Jamie wondered why the seasonal frosts hadn't eroded the brickwork more. It's had 60-some million seasons to do its damage, he told himself. Yet, as he touched the bleached white wall with his nano-gloved fingers, he saw that its surface was scarcely pitted. Archaeologists had studied these buildings, he knew. He'd read their reports. No one could explain how the structures had remained relatively undamaged over all those millions of years. These bricks must be more than adobe, he reasoned. Maybe the Martians could teach us something about construction materials. Another one of Mars's mysteries, Jamie said to himself. And he smiled. Someday we'll figure out the answers to all the mysteries, and Mars will be a lot less interesting. Or will it? The answer to one mystery usually leads to still more unknowns. Morning sunlight was slanting into the cleft as Jamie ducked through the low doorway of the building and stepped inside. Whoever built these structures wasn't very tall. He remembered how he and Dex Trumbo had to get down on all fours inside their bulky hard-shell suits and crawl through the entrance. In the flexible nanosuit, he could walk through if he hunched over. 20 years' worth of curious, two-legged explorers from Earth had swept away all the dust that had accumulated in the buildings. The rooms inside were bare, their stone-covered floors cleared and somehow sterile-looking. Archaeologists had come and gone, cleaning, searching, sifting the dust, seeking artifacts, fossils, some hint of who built these cliff structures, some clue about their purpose in the lives of their vanished builders. Over the span of more than 20 years, they had found precious little. Practically nothing, Jamie knew. The rooms had been empty. No furniture, no altars, not a scrap or a shard to indicate why the structures had been built up here in this inaccessible site, or what they had been used for. The Martians had taken their secrets with them. Jamie clambered up the aluminum ladder that had been placed for access to the next floor. The drawings were on a wall on the uppermost floor. One wall out of the entire complex of buildings. Was this your shrine? Jamie asked the vanished Martians. Your school? A battery of full-spectrum lamps faced the wall, connected to a thermionic nuclear power pack, pointing at the drawings like an execution squad. The lamps were off, but there was enough sunlight coming in through the light well in the ceiling that Jamie could make out the etched figures clearly. Archaeologists had sprayed the wall with a monomolecular coating of clear, hard plastic so that no one could damage the lines of finely etched figures. Jamie shook his head at their precaution. 60 million years of time hadn't erased the drawings. But maybe a handful of thoughtless assholes could mess them up, he admitted to himself. At first, the scientists thought the figures had been writing. Line after line of delicate curves and swirls etched into the rock facing of the wall. Gradually, the teams of archaeologists and philologists who had come to Mars to study the figures came to the conclusion that they were pictographs. A form of writing, to be sure, but one that used pictorial symbols rather than arbitrary shapes to form words. Jamie reached out with a gloved hand, barely able to suppress the very human urge to touch the symbols. He saw a circle with rays coming out of its perimeter, so much like the sun symbols of the Southwest Native Americans that his breath still caught in his throat whenever he looked at it. Other symbols vaguely reminded him of snakes, triangles, even a few that sort of looked like trees. Line after line of carefully wrought pictographs. They had eyes like ours, Jamie told himself, and hands, fingers. They had minds like ours. The lines of precise, regularly spaced figures ended about a meter above the cleanly swept floor. Then came ragged, lopsided symbols, obviously scrawled in desperate haste compared to the orderly pictographs above them. The methodical lines of symbols had been inscribed deeply into the stone by chisels or similar instruments. The childlike scribbles had been scratched out quickly, roughly, as if the person who scraped them onto the rock had been looking over his shoulder, staring death in the face. It's their history, Jamie was certain. They were telling the story of their people, their way of life, their beliefs, their dreams. And then it happened. That giant meteor hit like the fist of devastation. The skies went dark. Their crops died. It became winter forever. Jamie stared at the symbols as if he could make them speak to him by sheer willpower. But they remained mute, lifeless. Are they prayers? Jamie asked himself. Was this collection of buildings placed up here in this inaccessible cleft in the rocks as some sort of temple? Will we ever know? Jamie stood there, as silent and unmoving as the stones themselves, until the sunlight began to fade. Dr. Waterman? The excursion monitor's voice in his earplug sounded foreign, alien. You're at the limit. Temperature's starting to go down. It took him 2 tries to make his voice work. Right, I'm starting back. With enormous reluctance, he turned away from the carvings and made his way back down to the lowest level of the building. It was late afternoon. He'd been in the building almost the whole day. Time to get back to the base, he told himself, before it starts to get really cold. As he slipped his arms into the climbing harness and clicked its lock on his chest, Jamie took one more look at the bleached white buildings. And he realized what he had to do. Depew, Florida, Longstreet Middle School.
Hey, geek boy!
Bucky Winters looked up. He'd been sitting on the bench by the batting cage, tying up the laces of the cleated baseball shoes he'd borrowed, hoping to get a tryout for the school's team. But Lonzo, Somoza, and a couple of the other older boys had descended on him.
What you doing? Somoza asked, grinning. His 2 pals were just as big as he was, twice Bucky's size.
Trying out for the team, said Bucky. He'd taken a double dose of allergy pills so he could get through this tryout with clear sinuses and dry eyes.
No, you ain't.
Yes, I am, said Bucky, getting to his feet. Somoza bent down slightly so that his red, angry face was hardly an inch in front of Bucky's. His 2 cohorts came up on either side. Bucky was surrounded.
We don't want any geek boys screwing up our team.
I know how to play, Bucky insisted. I'm better at shortstop than Ricky is.
The hell you are.
Give me a chance at a tryout and I'll prove it.
No way, geek. Take off your cleats and go home. Go back to Mars, said the oaf on his left.
Yeah, we don't want any Mars boys on our team. We heard about your big project.
Yeah, it's a shame somebody mashed it flat, Somoza said, smirking.
Bucky's temper flared.
You're the one who busted up my model.
Somoza grabbed Bucky by the front of his shirt.
That's right, Mars boy. And if you don't get the fuck out of here, we're gonna bust you up, too.
Bucky kicked Somoza in the shins as hard as he could, making him yowl with pain, then punched him squarely in the nose. Blood spurted. The other 2 were stunned with surprise for a moment. But before Bucky could get away, they grabbed him and helped Somoza beat him into unconsciousness. When all 4 of them were brought before the school's principal, Somoza pointed to his bandaged nose and claimed that Bucky started the fight. Bucky's head was bandaged, his ribs were encased in a plastic cast, his face was lumpy with bruises.
You struck the first blow? The principal demanded of Bucky.
Through swollen lips, Bucky admitted.
Yes, ma'am.
The principal shook her gray-haired head.
First this Mars business, and now you've started a brawl. You'd better be very careful, young man. You're in a downward spiral.
Boston, Trumbull Trust Headquarters. Dex Trumbull tried to hide the mistrust he felt. Why has this priest flown here all the way from Rome, he wondered silently. What does he want? Monsignor DiNardo was smiling patiently at him as he sat in the bottle-green leather armchair before Dex's wide, curved desk of Danish teak and brushed aluminum. The priest wore a plain black business suit, with his clerical collar and its touch of purple. DiNardo looked burly, with bulging shoulders and barrel chest. his scalp shaved.